Hello, and welcome to the Art of Intuition podcast. My name is Susan Jane, and I believe that trusting your intuition is the best way to live your life with meaning and purpose. Each week you will hear about how you can connect, develop, and trust your intuition through interviews with other guests and my own personal experiences. Join me to understand how your intuition can guide you towards a life full of meaning and loving purpose. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Intuition. I'm actually just, you know, mixing it up a little bit here. I'm testing out the Voice of Intuition because I do the Art of Intuition, which is where we actually do art drawings and we do readings on them. But that's a whole new story. As you've probably gathered, if you're a subscriber, please subscribe. Yes, if you are a subscriber, I'm actually running the last couple of weeks. I've been running Replay Tuesday. Now, Replay Tuesday is about having some of these wonderful guests that we've had on and replaying their podcast again, because we can do it once, but there's a lot of new people coming on board and they're missing some of that, the older podcasts. And honestly, they're not old in the fact that they were only recorded 12 months ago. So they've still got a lot of really good content in them. So I'm doing Replay Tuesday. So that's why you're getting two podcasts now per week. One is Thursday mornings, well, Australia time, Thursday mornings for our new ones, and then Replay Tuesdays, which were, I'm showing you some of the highlights from the older ones. So that's that. Like I said, like, subscribe, do what you need to do, but welcome on board. Now, today, this lady sent me a request to be a guest on the show, and I was a little bit floored by her story. Now, I know this story is general to a lot of people, that a lot of people have experienced what Charlene has experienced, but not a lot of them are willing to talk about it, and not a lot of them are willing to go into that side of things and share how they have got through it. And this is what I thought was really, really lovely. Now, we know this is all about self-love. You saw the first part of it. You saw the introduction or the heading. Title, yep, that's it. So we know it's all about self-love, but I want you to get an understanding of what this woman has been through and how she has got to where she is today, because this is so, so relevant in this day and age. So I'm not going to tell you anymore. I want you to welcome on board Charlene. Hi, Charlene.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Ah, we're delighted to have you. So, Charlene, I'm going to get straight into it. How did you get to where you are today?
My story is a long time coming to the point that I'm at now. My story really starts back when I was about 3.5 years old. And I was born into a pretty dysfunctional family. I was the youngest of 4 kids. And my father was a very severe alcoholic, and when he drank, he got violent. And unfortunately, my older brothers, twins, who are my half-brothers, because they weren't biologically his, they dealt with the most of the violence and the abuse. And again, when I was 3.5, my mom had to make a tough decision. She knew that if she stayed in the marriage, there was a really good chance that one of my brothers was going to be killed, and she had to decide stay or go. And of course she made the decision to pack up the kids and go. Now, my dad was fine with her taking the boys and leaving, but he would not allow her to take my sister and I. And so my mom was really stuck with a difficult decision: leave and save the 2 children that she could, or stay and risk losing the kids, one of the kids. So she made the decision to take my brothers and leave. And it was not very long after that, it was probably only about 2 weeks later, that my dad contacted my maternal grandparents, because he was in no shape to raise 2 kids. He couldn't look after himself, let alone children. And he asked if they would take us. And my grandmother did not skip a beat. She said, absolutely, we will take the girls. And my grandmother was such an amazing woman. She was so strong. I always said she was really far ahead for her time. She believed women should get a good education. They should, you know, get a career, be independent, not depend on men. And I always say that I learned that lesson probably a little too well. And as wonderful as my grandmother was, unfortunately, my grandfather was a pedophile. So at the age of about 3 and a half, both my sister and I started experiencing sexual abuse at his hands. And this was almost a weekly occurrence. My grandmother, as wonderful as she was, she took one day off a week evening for a couple hours just to go and do some self-care, which is so important. She would go to bingo every Monday night. And my grandfather was the type where he would wait till her car was gone out the driveway and disappeared, and up the stairs he would come and we would deal with the abuse. So this carried on for just over 9 years. And when I was 12 and a half, my sister was 16. She went to school one day and basically had a nervous breakdown. She could no longer keep it inside. And I mean, 9 years, that's a long time for anybody to hold on to that kind of secret. And she was getting to the point where she wanted to leave at 16 because she was afraid she was going to become impregnated. And she was terrified that if she left, the abuse that I was receiving was going to get worse. So she went to school and everything came out. My grandfather was arrested. My grandparents got divorced. So here, the only family that I really knew has now just shattered apart. So this is the second family I have that I've lost. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm sitting in the social worker's office, and they're, you know, I've got the social worker sitting across and she's asking me all these questions, and I'm kind of like not answering because I don't, you know, I'm feeling so much shame for everything that's gone on and for so long that I'm just trying to, you know, I don't want to talk about any of it. And I remember her coming around the desk and kind of patting me on the shoulder and saying, I just want you to know that you're going to be okay. Now I'm 12 and a half. And I'm thinking, I don't know what okay looks like. Like, I don't feel like my life has ever been okay. And I'm already feeling this at 12 and a half. So my grandmother, being the strong woman that she was, felt that if we just put our heads down and moved on with life, things would be fantastic. Let's just pretend that, you know, everything is over and done with. And that's great. But there was no counseling. There was no therapy. There was no dealing with the emotions that we were feeling. And, you know, we're talking the mid 80s. So this is not, you know, a big thing as, you know, as it is today. So I go into high school now and I'm dealing with the stigma of being the kid in town whose grandfather sexually molested her and whose parents didn't want her. And it's a small town, so everybody knows. And I'm just trying to, like, I just want to be normal. That's all. I remember thinking that more than anything. I just wanted to fit in. I didn't want to be different than anybody else, but I knew I was. And I started drinking very early on in high school, kind of as a way to fit in, but also as a way to numb the emotions that I was feeling because they were so overwhelming and they just kept getting stronger and stronger. And they got to the point where I was starting to suffer from severe depression. I was cutting myself. I was suicidal. I was trying to find ways of, you know, taking my life, ending my life without hurting my grandma, because, you know, she was the only person I felt that loved me and I didn't want to hurt her, but I also didn't want to be here. And so I found an outlet when I was, you know, when I couldn't cut, I found the outlet of writing. And it became a passion where I could just pour these words out, all these emotions that had built up. I could pour them out onto paper. And I always said that I poured ink out onto the paper rather than blood, because a lot of times it was one option or the other. And of course, when you're, you know, 15 at the time and you're writing all this dark stuff, it garners attention. And my English teacher brought me into the guidance counselor's office, who called in the school psychologist, and They do an afternoon long assessment on me, questionnaires, talking for 4 hours. I went through all of this. And at the end of it, the psychologist looks across the desk and says, I want you to know we're diagnosing you as manic depressive bipolar. I'm 15. I'm in there by myself. I've got no, you know, parent or guardian in there with me. And I'm thinking, I don't even know what that means. All I know is not only am I the kid that, you know, the child abuse victim whose parents didn't want her, I'm now crazy on top of it because that's what that meant to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she, if you need to talk, please book an appointment with us and come talk. And I'm thinking, that's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to talk about any of this. I just want to pretend that none of this happened. So again, it just fit that pattern of there was no aftercare. It was a diagnosis. Here you go out into the world. I hope you're going to be okay. And, you know,
oh, that's just amazing. And so I just have to jump in. Sorry. I want to listen to the rest of it, but it's just amazing how they're using their terminology on a 15-year-old, 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're using their terminology. Oh, and if you want to talk, it's like, what? You know, mm-hmm. What part have you not got here? Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Keep going, Charlene.
Well, that's okay. And it kind of fit the pattern of, you know, because here's a psychologist and they said, but we want you to know you're going to be okay. And again, like now I'm getting, you know, I'm 15. So now I'm starting to get angry because I'm like, I want adults to stop telling me I'm going to be okay. Like, why does everyone keep promising me I'm going to be okay when I don't feel okay? So all I can think of is, again, doing what my grandmother taught me to do, just put my head down, finish what I need to finish, which at the time for me was I needed to graduate high school because I needed to move. I needed to get away from the town. I needed to go somewhere where I could just be a face in the crowd. And that's what I did. And I always did really well at school and it was easy for me, which was good, but because my grandmother, it was so important to her. And I just wanted to make her happy because I was so terrified that the one person in my life that I thought would always be there for me and would always love me, I had to ensure that I, you know, I was pleasing her because if I didn't, what if she sent me away? You know, I had this fear in my head. And so I get through high school and I move away as soon as I can. And I actually moved away with my high school sweetheart and we moved to a much larger area. It was about 2 hours from where I grew up, where really no one knew who I was. And I thought life was going to be better, right? Because we always think, you know, geography will make a difference in our lives. It's like, if I just move away, everything will get better. But it's not where we're living, it's us that's the issue. And I always say, wherever I went, there I was, so I couldn't escape it. So we decide early on in our marriage, our young relationship, we're going to have kids. And for me, this kind of fit into my plan, because if I had kids, I would create these little beings that would love me forever, and they would stay with me forever. And I was just so desperate to fill that hole and that void, because I was just looking for someone to love me at that point. And of course, I'm still drinking heavily at the time because I'm not doing any work. I wasn't getting any help. And of course, that's, you can only hold things off for so long. And, you know, I have my first daughter and then I have my second daughter, and my relationship with them is really, I mean, I absolutely loved my children, but my relationship was strained because I struggled to be affectionate with my daughters because every time there was physical contact, I would feel uncomfortable inside because of the physical contact I had received from the person who was supposed to love me. And then I had my son and of course everything was fine and I didn't have that discomfort with him, but I'm struggling with these guilty feelings of feeling this way and knowing that, you know, I'm drinking heavily, I'm not being a good mom. So all of these generational patterns I'm feeling, I just keep repeating them. I can't stop it. And I remember when I was 28, I realized that I had slipped into such a dark depression that I was contemplating suicide again. And I was actually making plans for it. And I realized that it would be my children that would find me when they came home after school. So I remember sitting down with my husband and saying, I need to leave the household. I need to try to get my stuff together. I can't look after myself right now, let alone three little children. And at this point, my marriage was basically over, non-existent anyway. So my husband was like, okay, yep, see you later. And so I moved out and I moved in with his mother actually, and thought that this would be a great opportunity to, you know, get myself together. But I just had this overwhelming grief of doing the same thing to my kids that my parents had done to me. I had just abandoned my kids in my mind. So it just sent me down an even greater spiral down into darkness. And about a month after I left my husband, I jumped right into another relationship because here I was just looking for someone again to validate and prove my worth. And when they say like attracts like, they are absolutely true, because the person I got into a relationship with was extremely dysfunctional. He was an alcoholic as well. I didn't know at the time, but he was a drug addict. He had just left a toxic relationship. And when he drank, he got extremely violent. And so very early on in the relationship, I started experiencing domestic abuse. And it really fit the narrative that I had for myself, because I didn't think I deserved any better. To me, this was what I was supposed to get for making the decisions that I had made regarding my children. I left my children. This is what I deserve. And so I just kept experiencing it and not, you know, doing anything to change the situation. And then one evening after a really violent episode, he had left the apartment and I was sitting on my living room floor and I'm just crying. And I'm like, I can't live like this. Like, this is no way for a human being to exist. And I got up and I went to my medicine cabinet and I took all of the pills, the sleeping pills, the pain pills. I took everything. And then I sat down on my couch and I grabbed a pad of paper and a pen and I started to write my goodbye letters to my children. And if this is something you've ever done, which I pray no one has ever done this or had to even think about doing it, it is the hardest thing you ever have to do, trying to explain to three little children. And I mean, my son was a year and a half at the time. How do you explain to them why you're leaving them, why you're abandoning them in the most final way that you can? Mm-hmm. And as I'm sitting there sobbing, trying to write these words down, I just was like, you know, I hear that little voice, like, you can't do this. So I called a cab, went to the emergency room. I was sitting at the admissions desk saying, hey, I've taken all these pills. I think I might overdose. And I collapsed. And when I woke up, I have tubes down my throat. And my partner is sitting in the chair beside the bed, crying, apologizing profusely, and promising it would never happen again. I get discharged the next day and I get a call from my mom and she's like, okay, you need to get your poop in a group. You need to move and you need to come across the country. We will help you get on your feet, bring the kids, you know, we'll help you get settled.
So this is your biological mom?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So moved across the country, packed the kids up and away I went. Cause you know, again, I'm just following this pattern of running, thinking that everything will be better once I run. And so I move, and 6 months later, my partner, who I had left in Ontario where I was living at the time, says, I'm coming out there to be with you. I love you. I miss you. Everything is going to be different. He moved out and we went through another decade of dysfunction and abuse and adultery and alcohol addiction on both of our parts. And just toxicity for both of us, but for me taking the abuse. And then I remember him coming home. This is 2015 and it's summertime. So it's actually Canada Day. So it's July 1st. And he comes home and he says, I'm packing all my stuff today. I'm moving out. And not only he tells me, is he moving out? He's moving directly in with someone else. So now I'm like, okay, I just got abandoned again. You know, this is just repeating the narrative that I keep telling myself, is that no one's ever going to love me. I'm never going to be good enough for anybody to stay. And he moves. And I think, okay, Charlene, now's the time. We're going to get our stuff together, right? This is it. And I just keep repeating that to myself and I'm putting on a brave face. And I was a master at hiding my emotions. Like, no one knew how really messed up I was because I was so good at wearing that mask. And I had a really great support group that kept me busy, helped me out and stuff like that. But it was about 2.5 months later after he had left when I have a police officer walk into my place of work, and he asks to talk to me outside. And he knew where to find me because he had been involved in one of our domestic disputes. So he was aware of where I was. And he said, "Charlene, I just want you to know, I just came on to shift. And I see on the board that there's a note that they've found your partner. He has shot and killed himself." And I am in that moment crushed. I can feel my entire world feels like it's just collapsing in on me, because now this feels like the ultimate abandonment. I think I had kept up this naive hope that, you know, I would be enough for him to want to come back to and get his life together for, and now that was all gone. And I was going to have to go tell my kids that their stepdad, you know, as horrible as he had been at times, they still loved him, and he was gone. And I had to try to figure out how I was going to exist now in this world. And about 2 weeks after, and again, I'm just going through the motions of life at this point. And I'm sitting down with a really good friend of mine, and I said, "I'm so angry." And she's like, "Of course you're angry. Anger is one of the stages of grief." And I said, "No, you don't understand. I'm not angry he killed himself. I am angry he did it first." And, you know, of course you say that, people just kind of look at you with a kind of a shocked look on their face. Mm. But I'm just thinking to myself, like, I've just witnessed how everyone's life is shattered apart when you make that choice. I've seen the people have to pick up the pieces. I've seen the heartache. How do I do that to someone I love? And I wanted to do it so badly. It's like, how do I do that? So I'm stuck in this battle of good and evil, light and dark, because I felt like at the time I was losing that battle. And I really was. And, you know, a month after that, I'm sitting in my bathroom floor in my condo, and I'm sitting with a gun cabinet key in one hand and pills in the other hand, trying to decide which one I'm going to do, right? Because I'm done. I'm done being in pain. I'm tired of hurting. I'm tired of having to pretend that I'm okay when I'm not. And, you know, we women always think about the repercussions, of course, of what our choice is going to be. And I'm thinking, okay, if I shoot myself, someone's going to have to come clean that. And I don't want that to happen. And that sounds like such a strange thought to cross your mind at the time. But I'm thinking also, if I take the pills, like, my son is going to be the one that's going to find me, because he's sleeping downstairs. And so I kind of just dropped those things, and I grabbed a knife and I started cutting myself. And as I'm sitting there, I'm looking at the blood pooling on the floor underneath me. And I'm like, we've got to do something. Like, we are on the edge at this point. We've got to either get help or it's going to be over. So I reached out and started seeing a psychiatrist. And I was about 3 appointments in, and I was starting to get really frustrated, because I'm one of those people that wants results right away. And I remember looking at her and saying, "Look, I understand why I'm screwed up. I understand. Like, I know my past better than anybody. So I know why I am the way I am. I just need you to tell me how to fix it. Like, just tell me how to fix this. I don't want to feel this way anymore." And I was like, "How did you deal with your mental illness?" And her eyes kind of glazed over, and she was like, "Well, Charlene, I've never dealt with mental illness." And I was just like, "What? Like, how can you tell me you know how I feel? How can you tell me it's going to be okay? Like, again, I've got another person telling me it's going to be okay when they don't know that, because they've never been where I am."
Oh, that's one of my biggest bugbears. It is so, I really get where you're coming from. People explaining, "Oh, yes, well, with this and this and this." But yeah, they've done a uni degree and they know it all.
I know. Because you read it in a book doesn't mean you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No. Yes. Yeah. So I kind of made a decision that day. I kind of checked out completely and emotionally. I was like, I had actually received a life insurance policy from my ex-partner's taking his life. And I had decided I was going to buy a house. And I remember telling the psychiatrist that, and she was so excited, because people that are going to kill themselves do not buy houses, right? But what she didn't understand was my plan was I was buying the house to leave as a legacy for my children, because I felt like it was all I had to give, was to try to set them up financially.
Yeah.
And I had kind of made the decision that I took possession of the house at the end of September. I set a date for the end of the next month. And that was the date I was going to take my life. And I was about 2 weeks out from that when a girl that I work with came up to me and said, "Hey, there's this woman's workshop. Would you like to come with me?" And I'm like, no, that's the last thing I want to do is go to a woman's workshop. And she's like, "Please, I really want to go, but I don't want to go alone." And I'm like, oh man, because like, that's my kryptonite, right? Like I'm always trying to help other people and look out for other people more than I ever did for myself. And I'm like, okay, fine, I'll go. And I'm thinking the workshop is the Saturday and Sunday. And I had the date I had picked to take my life was Monday. So I thought, okay, this is actually perfect because I can go there and pretend and no one will ever know that there's anything wrong. So this will work out. So I showed up to that workshop that Saturday morning. I had my hunting rifle in the back seat of my car. I had the stick that I was going to use to pull the trigger. I had the date, I had the location picked out. I was actually going to the same location that my ex-partner had gone to, and I was going to shoot myself there as well. And I walked into the room of this workshop and I immediately felt sick to my stomach because I am looking at a room full of women who, to me, in my eyes, look like they have it all together. Mm-hmm. And I am feeling, it's like my feeling of not fitting in the world just seemed to be magnified in that moment. And I thought, oh, what did I do? Like, why am I here? And I thought, okay, just go sit down. You can get through these 2 days. So I went and sat at my table, and the whole first part of the day, it's people talking about wealth or finances. And I'm thinking that's not relevant, and fitness and health and diet. And I'm like, that is so not relevant in my life right now. And, but then the afternoon session comes on and a woman takes the stage and she is bald and she has alopecia. And she started sharing her story about she'd gotten alopecia when she was a young child and how she had struggled so much with it, you know, dealing with teasing and bullying and having no sense of self-worth because she didn't feel, number one, beautiful by society's standards. She felt that she didn't fit in, she didn't belong, and she just didn't love herself. Like she was waiting for everybody else to tell her that she was worthy because, you know, hair. And it was the moment where she actually learned to love herself and stop worrying about what anybody else thought and just thinking, you know, if I love myself, that's enough. That her entire life changed. And now she was going out and she was speaking about it. And I'm sitting in my seat and I kind of listening and I hear this voice in my head that says, "What about you?" And I think to myself, yeah, how different could my life have been had I just learned to love myself? What if I would have stopped needing validation from other people to prove my worth, to say that I am worth being here? I am worth existing. What if I could have done that myself and given myself that gift? And I kind of brushed her off and okay, whatever. Next speaker gets up and she starts talking about living with depression and mental illness and how for 20 years she had suffered by fighting her mental illness. And it was the moment that she learned to embrace it as part of her being. Didn't mean she liked it, but she just accepted it was part of her and learned to live with it.
Yes.
That her entire life changed. And again, I hear that little voice that says, "What about you?" And I'm thinking, yeah, what about me? Like, what if I could have learned to live with my mental illness? What if I could have learned to not be in the dark all the time? What if I could have embraced the light and live? How different could life have been? And again, I just kind of brush it off. And then the last speaker comes up and it's a gentleman and he starts talking about living with mental illness, being suicidal, being an alcoholic, being addicted to painkillers and sleeping pills, and having a failed marriage and very little access to his kids, and how he had tried for a year to find a perfect mix of sleeping pills, pills, and alcohol so that he could overdose but make it look like an accidental death because he sold life insurance. And he knew he had to make it look like an accidental death. And it just so happened one night his wife asked if he could watch the kids. And he, of course, he said yes. And it was that night that he found that perfect mix. And as he was laying on his couch, overdosing, knowing that he was dying, he heard a little voice in his head that said, "No, not like this. There's more." And he managed to get to his phone, called 911, and was able to get help. And from there, he went and got clean and sober. He went and got help. He got into therapy. And now he was traveling around and he was sharing his story in hopes that he could inspire someone, he could give someone else hope. And as I'm sitting in that seat listening to his story, and he's the last one of the day, I'm sitting there going, what is going on right now?
Yes.
It's almost like I'm looking around for a hidden camera because I'm like, what is going on? I'm thinking, I'm at an event that I didn't want to go to, that I've just heard three speakers in a row who have talked about the three areas of my life that I have struggled with the most and that I need the most help with. Like, this is not by accident. I am here for a reason. I was meant to be here, to be in this seat and to hear these stories. And if I'm meant to be here at this moment, I'm meant to be here for life.
Yes.
And it was in that moment, it was like a light switch went. And I was like, no, if these people can impact lives by sharing their stories, then maybe that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe, you know, because I had a heart for service. I always wanted to help other people. And I'm like, maybe everything I've been handed and given in life has been given to me because I was strong enough to handle it. And I am willing and open to go out and share it, to give hope to other people, to say, you know what, to not just know it from a book, but to say, I know how you feel. You know, I've been in the dark. I've been there, but you can rise up into the light and it's okay. It's okay to not be okay because we think we have to have it all together. We don't.
Absolutely.
And I made a decision that day that I was in life for good. That was it. I was going all in. And I remember approaching the organizer of the event and I said, I would really love to sit down with you and let you know how the impact that this event has had on my life, because I felt I owed that to her. And I shared my story with her and I said, I would love to come back next year and share my story. And she was like, I would love to have you.
Yeah.
So I came back the next year and I shared my story. And, you know, I remember before I got off the stage, I said, you know, my goal in sharing my story is to give hope. And if by sharing the story and everything I've gone through can save just one life, then everything I went through is worth it. Everything.
Yeah.
And I left the stage and I was getting ready to walk out of the room. And I had a woman approach me and she said, you know how you said you wanted to save a life? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, today you did. And she turned and walked away. And I still, every time I tell that story, I still get goosebumps.
Yeah.
And I was like, as I'm kind of sitting there in shock, going like, what did I just hear? I heard that little voice in the back of my head that said, now let's go find one more. So for me, every day is a day of purpose to go out and find that one more person who needs hope, who needs to know that they're not alone, who needs to know that they can love themselves enough. They can accept every part of them, the good or the bad, and that they know that there is a purpose for them to being here and they can live an absolutely amazing life. So that's why I'm here. That's why I do these podcasts, because I want to share that hope with so many people.
Wow. And you have got such an amazing story. Before we go any further, on the ticker tape, because we are actually a podcast, so people on the podcast can't see the ticker tape, but the little ticker tape at the bottom is Charlene's website, which is charlenemadden-speaker.com. So it will be in the description there so you can get it from there. But if you want Charlene as a speaker, if you feel that's going to help the area that you're in, jump on board there. But she also does other things on the website too, so jump onto there. So your story blew me away was the fact that after going through all of that, and I know self-worth is a really big issue, and it was a big issue for me. So I struggled with self-worth, still have that, you know, you still get those hiccups. I just want to talk about the self-love side of it, like how, after all that, what were those little steps that you took? Because we've got that beautiful big picture, but mm-hmm. what were those little steps? So somebody's just gone and went, you know what, you've just saved my life, like that lady has said. What are those little steps now that they need to take? But first of all, what is self-love? Because people think it's really selfish. What is self-love to start with?
Self-love looks different for everybody. Like, I don't think there's a single thing, but it just means that, you know, I look in the mirror in the morning and I don't necessarily go, okay, I love everything I see, but I love me, right? And I look at myself and I go, I'm not perfect, but I don't have to be. And I'm worthy. I'm enough. You know, yes, I will always strive. And I mean, what we do, and you know, if you want to call it self-improvement or whatever it is, the growth, it's a lifelong commitment. You know, I will always, I work on myself every day. And whether it's getting up in the morning and journaling and just, you know, trying to, you know, pour my thoughts out, writing gratitude down, things to be grateful for, because sometimes we get so caught up in the negative of stuff that it's hard to see the positive, right? So it's like, you know, I love my stretch marks, you know, like it's all these little things that, and I may write it down and not really feel it at the time, but it, you know, I try to, you know, put these affirmations and these mantras in place. And I started looking at, you know, asking myself the question of what would someone do? Because, you know, it's hard in the beginning because you don't just all of a sudden, I love myself. It's everything's easy.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's a struggle in the beginning and it's work like anything else. So I just always have the mantra in my head that what would someone who loves themselves do in this moment? What would someone who loves themselves say to themselves? What boundaries would they set for other people and more importantly for themselves? What behaviors would they do? You know, so it's not a all of a sudden that's it, you're in it and you love yourself. It's, and like you said, like there's days that I struggle and I go, oh, you know, like I shouldn't have said that this way, or I, you know, I should have not eaten that whole half a cake that I ate for dinner, but it's accepting. And I think what, you know, one of the words that I say is grace. And I mean, and grace in my life was huge because I was not the best parent. And my oldest daughter has struggled with mental health issues herself. And I remember sitting in a social worker's, you know, room with all these social workers sitting at a table at the other end with my daughter and her just railing on me about what a horrible parent I was. And she was right. I wasn't a great parent. And I remember just looking at her and saying, I just want you to know I did the best I could with the tools that I had. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I absolutely think being able to say that to ourselves and give ourselves that grace is probably the number one step. Like,
yeah,
you're doing the best you can right now with the skills that you have. So give yourself that.
Yes, absolutely. I so agree with you because we're so harsh on ourselves sometimes. Mm-hmm. But one of those other areas that we're looking at there too is one of the areas that I went to, and when you said, you know, you stand in front of the mirror, you don't necessarily like all you see. I used to pretend my best friend was beside me. And if I had an issue or a problem, I would then talk to my best friend. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no way known I'm going to give her, because she's my best friend, bad advice. So the advice was coming from my heart. Mm-hmm. And I was delivering it to my best friend who was going to be me, you know. So I started to put myself in that way. If I couldn't talk to myself in the mirror and sort of go, yes, you're worthy, yes, because you're looking again at that physical aspect and it's not coming from the spirit, from the heart. But when I had my best friend, pretend best friend, sitting mm-hmm. beside me, And I'd go, okay, well, this is my situation. And I'd put her in that. And then this is what I would suggest that she does. And I always gave her good advice and then went boing back to me. That's the advice I need to take. So, yeah, it was a long way around, but it was enabled me to be able to do mirror work a bit later on, because one of those things you couldn't do is in any mirror work, just can't do that. To be looking at yourself while you're on a video, you couldn't do any of that. It was like, thanks. Whereas nowadays you can look at it because you can see it from the heart, not from the physical aspect, and you are accepting. So the self-love is all about accepting who you are, what you're going through, what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Why that matters, obviously, that's a pretty obvious thing. Why it matters is because we self-harm, and we might do that emotionally, physically, spiritually. We do it in so many different ways. Yeah. It is really important. So, again, I just want to reiterate, how can we embrace the self-love? What's some of the little tricks that you actually did that maybe people can start practicing? I've just given one about talking to your pretend best friend. What's another trick that they could do?
I got really selective of who I let in my space, because I realized that I was just taking anybody into my life, anybody's energy into my life, because I was just so desperate. So, and again, to me, this all comes down with boundaries. So taking a serious look at the relationships in your life. And I work coaching with women one-on-one. And some of the things I do is when I first start working with someone, I tell them, like, my office is a no bullshit zone, pardon my French. But so I expect radical honesty when people come in. And what that means is you have to take an honest look at your life and see where 100% where you are in your life, what's working, what's not working. And if it's not working, then you need to take the steps to get that out of your life. And sometimes it's really hard because it means you got to cut some people out of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then you also have to, and this is probably the thing that most people struggle with that I work with, is you need to take self-responsibility.
Yes.
So I work on self-honesty, self-responsibility, and self-love. Like you, I could look at my past and I have lots of things I could blame, you know, why I was where I was on my past because of what happened. But at the end of the day, the choices I made as an adult were my choice. And yeah, I may not have had the right skills and tools, but I also didn't make the choice to learn those skills and tools. I took other coping mechanisms rather than taking an honest look at my life and going, okay, you know what? Like, I'm the one who's choosing to be in this toxic relationship. I need to change that. Doesn't matter what, you know, happened with my dad. I can make a different choice. So when you start taking self-responsibility, you take your power back.
Absolutely.
A lot of people that we've had so much trauma and have felt so powerless that taking your power back, that's self-love. You know, you love yourself enough to say, no, I'm going to make the right choices in my life.
Yeah. And even if it's not the right choices, they're your choices. Absolutely. And you live with those choices and you accept them and you change them as you get the understanding to it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it is. It's all about that empowerment, self-empowerment. Yeah, for sure. Oh, wow. And I know when I was doing a lot of my reading, a lot of my changes, like growth area, when I was in an abusive relationship too. So why do we do this? And you know who are in abusive relationships? People that are caregivers, like people that are wanting to help others, we tend to fall into those because we're not, you know, we keep thinking we can fix things, but we can't always fix them. But when I started doing my changes, yes, a lot of my friends, I had to, they were changed. I just couldn't be around those sort of people. And that was probably some of the hardest. And there's, you know, you have a couple of them that want to have that control over you. And when you start pulling back and going, no, I don't want to be there, they push back harder too. So you've got to really be strong and you've got to be ready to do it. So
yeah, I equate it to the crabs in a bucket, right? Like, I mean, when you start experiencing growth and you start going, oh, wait, like I don't want to spend every Friday night getting drunk in your kitchen. I want to do more. And for you to try to go, I want more, puts a spotlight on them that they don't want more, and people don't like that, right? So if they can just keep you down, it doesn't magnify that they're not making any changes. So
absolutely, exactly. They don't like it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there will be that. And I mean, honestly, when you're aware of it, you know what's going on. You get that understanding of it, and you don't actually hold it against them. You just sort of go, well, you know, you do you and I'll do me.
Yeah. And it's not about them. It's like, it's not about you. This is about me. You know,
it's about me.
It's not you. It's me. Right. So.
But before we go, cause we're running out of time now. Mm-hmm. Charlene's got a book called Evolution of Spirit. Okay. So you've written this book, and it is it's not on Amazon. It's just available at this website. Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you really quick about the book, because the book was, after I went to that first workshop that saved my life, I went through, there was the MC of the event said, I want you to start doing things that scare you, do things that take you out of your comfort zone. And I was like, so I wrote, you know, a list of six things down. And one of them was publish the poems that I had written throughout my life. So these were the poems that were my trauma, my healing. And I published the book for myself. That was part of my healing journey, was to, because to me, it was opening my heart and putting myself out there. So I published that book. So I never put it on Amazon. I've only sold it. I only did 100 copies. I published them and I put them in my closet. Now I'm like, okay, we need to make space in my closet. So I'm down to 10. I have 10 books left. So I'm like, all right, we're good. So,
all right. So that's available at ascensionwellnessstudio.com. Okay. Correct. Ascensionwellnessstudio.com. I'll pop that down in the description anyway, but thank you so much. It was an amazing story, and it's really nice to see how so much negativity can create so much positivity. You know, the flip of it is just amazing. And I know it's not an instant flip. Mm-hmm. I know it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort, but holy shit, it's worth it, isn't it? Excuse my French.
Yeah.
So thank you, Charlene.
Can I end with one thing?
Yeah, for sure.
I always like to just throw this out there. I know what it's like to be in the dark and to feel really all alone. And I don't want anyone to ever feel like that. So I always let people know I'm available. You can find me on social media, Charlene Ann Madden, on a speaker and author on Facebook. But if you're feeling alone and you feel like you don't have anybody to talk to, I am available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Message me. If you're feeling like you're stuck in a dark place, you don't have anybody to talk to, you don't have anyone that will understand, I will understand. So please reach out to me. I don't want anyone to ever feel alone. So I always like to throw that message out there. So.
Wow. Thank you. And that's a big call too, because this is an international podcast. So, you know, don't sort of be too concerned about times, because at night here, it could be daytime over there where you are. So that's a huge call. Thank you, Charlene. I really appreciate it. And thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. And thanks for providing a platform to change lives. That's awesome.
No, now you're giving me goose pimples. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay. Oh, that was amazing. And I didn't want to ask questions. You know, when you get a speaker on that, you just are absorbed in what they're saying, and you're feeling what they're experiencing. And it's like, I haven't experienced it in the same degree, but we've all got our stories, and it's really, really important that we reach out when we need to. And sometimes it isn't easy, but, you know, there's an anonymous text message. You can send her a message on Facebook to Charlene, and she's willing to give you a helping hand. And same goes for me, but I'm not as clever as that. I don't feel I'm as comfortable as that in being able to help and support, because I haven't experienced that sort of depth of despair. I really haven't. Mine is completely different. But anyway, we're all there for a reason. And I would love you to subscribe to the podcast and do all those things that we need to do. I've now got flower messages of love, flower readings. So if you want to send your mum a message of love and you don't quite know how to get through the mushy stuff, You pick a flower image and I actually do the reading for you and send it to your mum. So it's how you feel about your mum, or it could be a relationship, anything like that. So we're putting out intuitive messages of love. So that's happening now. We've got the online courses for developing your intuition, learning how to do flower readings, and we've got workshops. Are we actually doing virtual workshops now where you actually do all the drawings and we do the readings together? But anyway, that's enough for me. I've got to say goodbye because I'm talking too long, and I will see you next week. Okay, don't forget replay Tuesdays. All right, all the best, guys. Bye for now.